Kia ora koutou. Ko Sam Broughton, Toko Ingoa, Kōra Mātua o Waikerekere. Hello again, my name's Sam and I'm the Mayor of Selwyn District. This podcast is a series of five to try and help unpack the Future for Local Government review. Today we're listening to a conversation partway through and joining it in episode four. We're talking about strengthening local democracy and partnership. The focus here is on extending the term of local elections, how we vote for the people that end up as our elected members, whether we lower the voting age or not, and how we get great co-investment to build leadership capability within the local government system. I trust you've enjoyed the conversation so far and are excited about the challenge and opportunity for change. The context for this discussion has to be about putting our communities first. It's all about our people and how we contribute to a thriving Aotearoa.
So the four-term electoral cycle would double the amount of usable time that every council has. It would make things incredibly beneficial, I think, for communities around certainty of outcome and the ability to deliver. At the moment, we've got a three-year term. You get a year of settling in with new people. You've got a year of actually doing stuff, and then a year of unsettling because everyone's thinking about the next election. And as soon as the newspaper rings and says, "Are you standing?" All of the things that we came together on the previous year get disrupted because there's competition amongst elected members. And when I saw that you've gone for an extended term, I guess it could be 4 or 5 or 6 years. I don't know what you were envisaging there. I doubt it was 10. You know, 4 sounds achievable. 5 might be a little bit too far to move from 3. But I'm like, that's for me the one. Like, let's do that soon. Let's make that happen because that would change things really quickly. Yeah, first up. So what was your thinking behind a 4 or 5 year term? You haven't been explicit there with the number. Why did you land with that one, Gail?
I think that's just one of the no-brainers in the report, a common sense recommendation. And we're not the only ones suggesting a longer than a 3 year term. A 4 year term was recommended in the electoral review report that came out just a couple of weeks ago. And we heard loud and clear when we first started talking with councils exactly what you've just said, Sam, about 3 years, you only just get to the point of being able to make some things happen and then it gets back into an election cycle. So we think that's common sense and definitely should be implemented.
Do you think it can happen separately than for the government and local governments, or do you think it needs to be all together?
Look, it can happen separately, and it might have to happen separately because the four-year term of government is one of those things that is entrenched and requires a supermajority of parliament. And like everyone, if you're one of the lucky ones who's in power, 4 years makes imminently good sense. And if you're not and you wish to be, then the sooner that you can get that opportunity, the better. So we were pretty clear that we said, look, we're only talking about local government here. There's a separate conversation, and as Gail mentioned, there's a justice electoral review that's just published some of its recommendations. We see a four-year term as making sense. It, internationally, four-year terms used a lot in Scotland, England, most of Canada, many of the Australian states. So, you know, the Commonwealth countries that we most often see ourselves being similar to. Yep, certainly that's the norm. And we're in a long-term business. Having some certainty to be able to deliver on some of the long-term objectives and actually make some progress, we think 4 years will help the machinery of government.
No, I think this is a change I'd advocate for at both levels, local and central government. However, if you look to history, women won the right to vote in local body elections in New Zealand before they won the right to do it at a central thing. So I think there's a precedent there to start at a local level and test some of those things, and perhaps that's something that we could even explore with lowering the voting age as well.
There's a few other sort of single recommendations that stand out. You talked about the way that we vote. First past the post is sort of in the traditional way of voting. STV, single transferable vote, or another a type of system that's proportionate, can often give a fair, well, does give a fairer outcome, but can be harder to understand. So how have you balanced sort of the getting the right outcome with actually just making voting, I mean, the turnout for voting at the moment is pretty abysmal for local government. Is moving to a fairer system with less people understanding it actually the right way to go?
The voting system generated quite a response across the country, and particularly from councils in their submissions. Many commented on it. Those, and I think there's 13 or thereabouts who currently use STV, or as we'd like to suggest the name, ranked voting. STV, single transferable vote, sounds complicated. Ranked voting is to us seems easier. You know, put the one you prefer most at the top and then the one after it, which is a little more plain English plain language in our mind. The advantages of ranked voting, in our view, particularly where there are multiple member wards, it gives a far greater chance of getting a more diverse representation around the council table. And our recommendations around lowering the voting age to 16, using ranked votings, establishing Māori wards and enabling tititi-based appointment to councils is all about broadening the representation at the council table. And we think ranked voting is one of the ways that helps achieve that. I would say single member wards are not great for getting diversity around a council table either. And it is a popularity contest, as we know at the moment. And those who are elected under first past the post probably find first past the post a very good system and will want to continue with it. But in our mind, having ranked voting, particularly in multi-member wards, is really important for increasing the diversity. And when diversity, the makeup of New Zealand is changing. You know, our councils are dominated by older European Pākehā members, but our community is looking significantly different to that, and over the next 40 years will look hugely different to how it is today. It is important that everybody feels that their voice has the opportunity to be represented at the council table, and we think ranked voting is a way of achieving that.
Can we talk a little bit about citizen participation? Because one of the things that really gripped me in the report and in the draft report too was the sort of notions of participatory and deliberative democracy. And New Zealand is, like many countries around the world at the moment, seems to be at the end of mistrust of authority and systems of government by some sections of the public. So it's really critical that we encourage greater citizen participation, I think, if we're going to build trust and encourage our communities to really effectively engage in civic activities. And the reason I love seeing this in the report, because it was something that councils could do right now. It doesn't require legislative change. It's something that tomorrow councils could turn around and go and say, let's engage a little bit differently on these issues and start to test and try that. Could you just talk us through the two a little bit and what using both of those might look like in a sort of tetiriti anchored system? And I guess in an environment where there is a certain demographic that is more likely to run and more likely to vote in New Zealand, why would we propose participatory democracy and town hall meetings with our voices might be the loudest ones that are heard?
Democracies need to evolve and innovate. And when we started looking at participatory and deliberative democracy, and one of the things that really stood out for me was that voting's only been around for about 250 years. Before that, there were much more deliberative methods of democracy, whether you go back to the Greeks or you look at indigenous democratic processes of Talanoa or Wānanga, much more deliberation. So for democracy to thrive in the future, we need to reclaim those deliberative methods and involve people in some of the hard conversations. We were really inspired by the Watercare Citizens Assembly, that they took a really controversial subject like future water strategy and ideas like recycling water. And through that deliberative process, Aucklanders, a diverse group of Aucklanders, made a decision that Watercare couldn't have imagined they would have made, and as a Watercare board would probably have been reluctant to make that decision, thinking it would be not very popular with the public. So we shouldn't underestimate what a diverse group of people, well informed and supported in a process, can come up with and grapple with really gnarly issues. Deliberative democracy is different from participatory democracy. Participatory democracy, people are probably a bit more familiar with, you know, if councils have got really strong engagement processes, they're probably already practicing some of these things. But we think that it could go a lot further. There's been a lot of talk about participatory budgeting, but not a lot of practice of it happening. And a lot of consultation, but not necessarily processes where people really do fully participate and have a say in. I've heard Penny say town hall meetings are not a participatory process. They're a dreadful process where people of a certain ilk can turn up on force and be quite hostile and threatening to elected members. So we're not necessarily advocating the traditional town hall meeting as a participatory process. With technology, there's so much more opportunity for people to participate, and there are some fantastic examples around the world, and Taiwan would stand out, where Audrey Tang, the government minister for digital technology and social innovation, she's led some amazing participatory processes for citizens to be part of making government decisions. So it's an area, when we first started on this panel journey and we talk about participatory and deliberative democracy, most people sort of looked at us quite confused, because it's not something that we have a practice of here yet. But as you say, Sanchi, it's something that can be done now without legislative change, although it does require some infrastructure around it, like the sortition process to select people for a citizens' assembly needs, there's a way to do it. And Koi Tu from Auckland University have done that with Watercare, and it's be great for us to tap into their expertise. They're also trying a few other deliberative methods. They're working with Auckland Transport at the moment and looking at things that maybe aren't as time consuming or as long as a citizens' assembly. So this is a fledgling area where there's so much potential, and it's not a big risk because it's been tried and demonstrated in many countries around the world, and we're seeing it accelerate, particularly in Europe, where people might know of what's happened in Paris on climate change with the council. In Belgium, it's used extensively in local government, and some of the deliberative democracy champions around the world have told us about examples in Spain. And I think it's an exciting space and is one way that elected members can be the facilitators of democracy, not necessarily the only people to exercise that representative role.
And just building on that, Gail, that the opportunity for local government to be the facilitators of democracy, it's not about taking away power. I think it'll actually strengthen the reputation and respect that there is for local government if they are prepared to trust citizens to make that good decisions. And all of the advice that we've received is that you give your citizens the biggest, most gnarly challenges that you face. They are the ones that would really benefit from the deliberative democracy process. And in the case of Auckland about water, climate change is going to be huge. Who is a community going to believe more? The council telling them that this is what is going to have to happen in the future and dictating the future trajectory, or if a group of citizens who are well informed, understand all of the issues, get the opportunity to debate it, and then provide their view of this is the best way in which we should respond, who is a community going to trust more? And if local government trust communities to be making those decisions, then we think that there will be greater trust in local government as well. And where there has been a significant breakdown in trust and confidence in democratic institutions, we see local government as playing a really important role in building trust and confidence in government, and in this case, local government.
Koitu, when they did the water care pilot, were quite conscious of making sure we're not just importing an idea from overseas into our context without being sensitive to things like tutility. So their report on that pilot canvasses those issues and how they engage with mana whenua, how they made sure that there was strong Māori representation in the citizens' jury, but also what more could be done to strengthen our form of deliberative democracy. Ngāti Toa are also interested in this and part of a research project looking at how they can tackle things like climate change using deliberative methods and tapping into Indigenous knowledge systems of deliberative democracy like Talanoa and Wānanga. So even more exciting if we can take some of those ideas and adapt them to our context and bring together the best of Western and Indigenous knowledge systems to support citizens and communities to share in the decision making.
Yeah, well, thanks for those examples. I think it's really cool for people to be able to explore more. And like you mentioned, the evolution of democracy, I think all too often, you know, as elected members, we can think we're elected to make decisions. And I think we're actually elected to ensure that good decisions are made. And it doesn't have to be us around the table always being the ones that are making that happen. So really great to hear those other examples.
Thanks for listening. I trust that this has been informative and helped you understand more about the review. I trust also that it's helped spark some conversations and thoughts about how you might implement change in your community. I really want to thank the panel for all the work that they've done. Jim Palmer, Penny Hulse, Antoine Coffin, Gail Surgner and Brendan Boyle. We really appreciate the effort, the thought, the research and planning that's gone into this, and obviously all the staff that sit behind the review too. Thanks to Sanchia for being part of the conversation team. Really appreciate your thoughts. To all elected members and executives, anyone that works inside councils, thank you so much for what you do to make your communities awesome. Thanks to LGNZ and the team of staff there doing an amazing job to serve local government across Aotearoa. I look forward to listening and discussing and debating and implementing all the recommendations that have been put forward in this review. I'm still Sam. Thanks for listening.